Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We are today in lesson 301, and we are in Leviticus 22 and verse 18 again. Let's read this one. And verse 18 we read, the words of God, where he's telling Moses in verse 17, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto Aaron and to his sons and unto all the children of Israel, and say to them, whosoever he be of the house of Israel or of the strangers in Israel. So in essence, God is telling them, and see, through Moses, to the priesthood, to all of Israel, and to all those who are grafted into the commonwealth of Israel. And this is a principle which has never been done away with, though some people in their ignorance, a lot of people in their ignorance, think that it was. They thought that God made a separation between his people and others. His people are supposed to obey the law, and the others, just a few little things, and that's all there is to it. And even many of the rabbis, in their ignorance, they say, well, you know, you Gentiles, all you're supposed to keep is just the Noahide laws, the laws of Noah, and they don't know what the laws of Noah are. They just invented in their own mind what the laws of Noah are. Noah was a righteous man. Noah obeyed all the laws of God. You see, the law of God did not come in Sinai. The law of God was from the Garden of Eden. That's what happens when there is ignorance all around the place. And in doing so, people are encouraging the ignorant to walk in iniquity, and they bring wrath on them. God made it very plain. All of Israel, all mankind, are to abide by the same law. Now, if he makes a little exception for a period of time, that's something else. You see, he did it with Abraham himself when he called him. And he was uncircumcised at that time. But when the time came, he said, it's about time you get circumcised. This is going to be the seal of your righteousness. You see, he was already righteous. And he had faith. And so it was also later on when he began to call, in the days of Jesus Christ, Cornelius, with Peter. But before that, Jesus Christ went and preached to the Samaritans. You see, he preached to them the same thing. That's why he told them, you don't know what you worship. We do know. Your law is perverted. Your teachings are perverted. You got mixed up information there. You know, truth and error. That's what he said. You don't know. Because of that, we do. And therefore, he told them, which is the way? And when he said, I am the way, he didn't say, well, I am the way for Israel, but for the Gentiles, I'm a different way. You see, Christ is not confused. He's not divided. But ignorant people divided him. God made it plain from the beginning. This is Jesus Christ speaking here. All of you priests, all of you Israelites, and all of you strangers, that includes the entirety of mankind. You all walk in the same law. And he repeated that several times, and we're going to read it. One law shall be to all of you. You see how much we understand that? We don't comprehend what is happening when it comes to the days of the so-called New Testament, which is now the days of the New Testament. You know, this is the days of the disciples. New Testament has not been made yet. That's coming in the future. The house of Israel and the house of Judah, and then through them all mankind. They just became a part, the forerunners, first fruit of that new covenant or New Testament. Well, the New Testament itself was not made yet. But in either case, New Testament, you know, the new marriage, the old marriage, they're all governed exactly by the same law. That's what Christ had to make it very plain. Look, don't think that I came to do away with the law or the Torah or the prophets. That's not something for the past. And today we've got something new. Now let's change all the names. No more statutes, judgments, ordinances, commandments and so forth. From now on, we're going to give it new names. It's no longer the way. From now on, we're going to call it Christianity. From now on, we're going to call it Christian doctrines, Christian values, Christian this and Christian that. Nowhere do you see it anywhere. Those were all the inventions of pagan Rome. And we follow in her footsteps. I've listened to terminology and who knows how many other things. You see, one of these days we're going to have to wake up and go back to the beginning. And realize, as Christ said many times, even though not everything was recorded, in the beginning it wasn't so. So let's go back to the beginning. That's why we're studying the Word of God, the Torah, from the beginning until the end. And that's what he said to them, all of you, Israel, the priesthood, strangers, that included everybody that was grafted into the house of Israel. And so he says, whatsoever he be, whatsoever, anybody, or whosoever, You see, he be of the house of Israel or of the strangers in Israel that brings his offering. And he could not bring an offering. Some people in their ignorance will say, aha, you see, strangers were allowed, even though they were uncircumcised, to come to the temple and bring their offerings. Well, that shows, you know, the ignorance that is in some people. If they're all to abide by the same Torah, they're all going to be circumcised. You see, that's a given. And it's important to study the Word of God, not the Word of men. A lot of people are listening to men, and men become their idols, and then they are led into error, and they believe lies, and they worship God with lies. And God made it very plain. Anybody is to be under the same law. So if the strangers wanted to be a part of the people of Israel, live in their land, they had to abide by the same Torah. They could not come and bring their own idol worship or their own religion, you see. And it was very simple from the point of view of God. You want to stay in this land, you walk by the same law. You don't want to get out of here. That's the reason why he told them when you go to the land, you just decimate every single person on the face of the earth, that is, in the land of Canaan. And everyone who is going to be there is going to be an Israelite. And people who want to stay stick behind, they had a choice. Obey the law of God, obey the Torah, and you can remain around. God allowed strangers to be around, but not as idol worshippers. You see? And it's because of the iniquities of Israel, because they would not obey the law of God and would not destroy all the Canaanites in order to torment them, so to speak, and spank them now and then. He finally allowed some of the Canaanite idol worshippers to remain in the land, and he used them now and then to oppress his own people, and he does it to this very day. People of a foreign religion, because of the iniquities of Israel. But in either case, if they are still in their own religion, they are not a part of the commonwealth of Israel. So God is talking about anybody who is a part of the commonwealth of Israel, who has been grafted to the commonwealth of Israel, all must be under the same law. There aren't two laws, one for Israelites and one for non-Israelites, and all worship the same God. You cannot. You cannot worship God in truth and in spirit and have two different religions, or three or four or seven. And that's what God is saying here. And people don't understand it, so they are in total Babylon, they are in confusion. You know, we've got a lot of churches, each one they have their own doctrines, and they think they can all worship the same God. How can you? God is one. He has one doctrine, one Torah. You see? How can everybody has their own ideas, their own concepts and doctrines, and all kinds of things like that, and they're all divided because of that, and they can all think, you know, that they can come before God. Some think, you know, I can do it on Sunday. Others say, well, you know, we know the right day is Sabbath, so we all come on the Sabbath, but we're all divided in our doctrines and teachings. We all do our own thing. You see? God does not accept this confusion. He calls it Babylon and tells us to come out of Babylon and come and worship Him in truth and in spirit. And so He gives this instruction very plainly. All the priests, all of Israel, and all the strangers, whosoever he be, all the house of Israel, all the strangers in Israel, that brings his offering, whether it be of any of their vows or any of their freewill offerings, which are brought unto the Eternal for a burnt offering, that you may be accepted. In other words, if you don't do it right in accordance with the Torah, you will not be accepted. If you are uncircumcised and you appear before God, you will not be accepted. If you have different doctrines which are different than the truth of God, you will not be accepted. And it's a vain worship. And he made it very plain. In vain do they worship me. There's an awful lot of worship going around in this country. They claim 95% they claim they believe in God. And many people, probably about half, they say, you know, that they attend church at least once in a while, if not all the time. And for what? You see, might as well go to the movies. God is not accepting much of that worship. It's in vain. Why? Because their doctrines, their teachings are of men and not of God. You see? And that's what God is saying here. Yes, but physical things. But the same thing goes for spiritual things. Because the physical things are symbolic of the spiritual. And so he said, you do that according to instruction that you may be accepted, and you shall offer a male without blemish. You shall offer doctrines and teachings before God and worship before God that is without blemish. And if you do, it's not accepted. The law was very plain about it, and that law was not done away with. And so it says, a male without blemish, of the beeves, of the sheep, beeves, that means cows, cattle, ox, whatever, or of the goats, but whatsoever has blemish, that shall not you bring. for it shall not be acceptable for you. You see? So God does not accept vain worship. He does not accept mixture of truth and error. He does not accept lies and deceptions mixed with the truth. He does not accept people that just had a big dinner made of ham, swine, you know, lobster and shrimp and all that, and they're full, and they feel comfortable and good, and they give thanks for God for that, and they feel so great, and they come before God and say, "Oh Lord, how good you are, that lobster was just wonderful," or the turkey, that is ham, that is Easter ham, or things like that. That's an abomination to Him. And yet people have been led astray, told lies, and their worship is vain. He's not accepting it. He's not there. A lot of people are praying to the ceiling. You don't realize that. What a waste of life. That's why Christ said, "Don't think that I came to do away with the Torah and the prophets. If we do think that He did, our worship is in vain. Because we would not know what is truth and what is not. And we would not know whether it is blemish or not in His sight. It doesn't make any difference that it's not blemish in the sight of our organization or sect or church or whatever it may be. If it is a blemish in the sight of God, He's not going to accept it. It's as simple as that. That's what we're standing here. That's what Paul was saying. Children of Israel, you ignorant Corinthians, you don't realize that. The children of Israel were eating spiritual food and drinking spiritual drink. Why? Because the rock that they followed is Jesus Christ. And He's a spiritual rock, he said. That's what we're studying here. Spiritual matter. These are, in modern terminology of pagan Rome, Christian doctrines. You see? Christian principles. Christian teachings. In reality, had they really obeyed Christ, then this terminology would have been great and okay. But since they don't, since by that they want to say, "Well, this is our religion, this is not your religion, the religion of Israel," that makes this terminology polluted and defiled. Because what they, when they say Christian, they mean something else. You see? He's a good Christian person. He eats ham, he eats lobster, and all kind of things like that. He keeps Sunday, not Sabbath. He has Easter. He believes in Christmas and in Halloween, all those things, not the holy days of God. What's a Christian about it? You see, the whole thing becomes polluted and defiled, and God does not want a mixture of it. That's full of spots and blemishes, and God said, "I would not accept it." Now we have to understand that. And so God speaks very plainly. That you may be accepted, you shall offer a male in all certain things. He gives them instructions. If it's not that, He's not going to accept it. He didn't say you shall offer a male without blemish of lobsters, of pigs, of mice, of rats, you know, of all those unclean animals, of rabbits, you see. Only the things that are clean. And so is the truth. Only the clean truth is accepted before Him, not the polluted one. And so He gives the instructions, and if we do not follow it, we're somewhere else. Verse 20, "But whosoever has a blemish, that you shall not bring, for it shall not be acceptable for you. And whosoever brings a sacrifice of peace offering unto the Lord in fulfillment of a vow, clearly uttered, or for a freewill offering, of the herd, or of the flock, it shall be perfect to be accepted. There shall be no blemish therein. Blind, on the other hand, or broken, or maimed, or having a wound, or scab, or scurvy, you shall not offer this unto the Lord." And so it goes for doctrine, false information, lies, perversion of truth. It will not be accepted. And yet people bring it supposedly to the altar of God. And God closes His nostrils. Can't stand, smell it because it's vengeful. And people continue to walk in their own merry way in blindness and darkness and filthiness, and they don't realize it. That's why God tells His own people, you think that you know it all. You're rich, you're increasing good, you think you know the truth, you know my Torah, you're walking in it, you obey it, and you don't realize, no, you are not. You're poor, you're miserable, you're wretched. You see, might as well say, you're stinking, you're filthy. Get out of my sight. You see, He's speaking about His own people. And how many of His own people are still walking in that Babylon, out of which Christ is constantly commanding us to come out, not to stay in it, not to be a part of it, not to be a part of its terminology, its thinking process, its culture, its feelings and thoughts and attitudes about His Word, His Torah, His truth, and so forth. It makes it very plain. These are all spiritual matters. In this case, they're applied to physical things, yes, but they reflect the spiritual. If God would not accept, you know, named or blemished physical things, how much less would he accept blemished truth? You see? And so he makes it very plain. You shall not offer this unto the Lord, nor make an offering by fire of them upon the altar unto the Lord, because you're going to defile the altar of God if you do it. Either a bullock or a lamb that has anything too long or too short, that may you offer for free will offering, but for a vow it shall not be accepted. So God gives the instructions exactly what he allows, what he does not allow, and we follow it. Verse 24, that which has its stones bruised, again, you know, the old English Puritan, Victorian, stones, has nothing to do with stones, has to do with testicles, that's all it says. And that's the pure language of God. That's a language without blemish. But when they change it and pervert it and inject their own filthiness, their own filthy minds and attitudes, it's a blemished, it's a maimed, it's a polluted language. That's one reason why God also says in Zephaniah, the day will come when he is going to give all mankind, all of humanity, a clear language, or pure language in Hebrew, Safa Brura, which means a clear language, not a confused one. People are confused. And here it is, one example of them. Stones. There are no stones. Plain testicles. That's all it is. God created them. He didn't create stones. You see how perverted people are and how they convince themselves that they are pure in their own sight. And so God makes it very plain. That which has its testicles, well, in this case, you know, the account does not even use the word. It just says bruised. And, you know, and everybody understands bruised what? Well, speaking about testicles, bruised, or crushed, or torn, or cut, because earlier he already used this word, ashach. That's a testicle, singular, and ashachim, plural. So there was no need to repeat it here. The readers know what he's talking about. And so he said, don't offer things like that. If it is crushed, or torn, or cut, you shall not offer unto the Lord, unto the Eternal, unto Jesus Christ. Don't offer it. Don't offer it to God. You see, the Father. Neither shall you do thus in your land, or wherever you are. Don't do it anywhere. So don't do it here in the wilderness, and don't do it when you go to the land. The law doesn't change. Until heaven and earth shall pass, not one jot or one tittle from the Torah is going to be done away with. It will always be the same. Neither from the hand of a foreigner shall you offer the bread of your God of any of this. You see, you must do it yourself. Why? Because now he's not talking about the stranger that became a part of the Commonwealth of Israel. He's talking about a foreigner that is of a different religion. He said, I don't want any bread from a polluted person. And they were regarded to be polluted because of their pollutions. As simple as that. You see? And that's what he's saying here. Everything must be holy. Even the people that make it must be holy. But he does not want a bread offered by a foreigner. He does not want sacrifices offered by foreigners unless they are willing to abide by the law of God. Because he does not want them on one hand to walk in pollutions and on the other to come and worship him. There are a lot of people, you know, they walk in filthiness and wickedness and crime and corruption and things like that. And then to soothe their conscience, they go to church, they go to synagogue, they go to whatever. You know, if you talk about Islam, you go to the mosque. And they offer a lot, you know, they want to make everybody believe that they're good people, and everybody says, oh, what a great man it is. And God realizes that man is like an open sepulcher, you see. It looks beautiful on the outside, but the inside is full of dead men's bones. That's what he said about the Pharisees, and God said he does not accept that, because that's full of blemish, you see, and he does not accept that. So the heart had to be right. And the heart of the foreigner cannot be right if he is not obedient to the Torah of God, and therefore God is not interested in his sacrifices. You see, before that, just like John the Baptist was very plain. He was not trying to be politically correct, you see, or speak nicely to people, or be friendly and influence people and gain people to Christ. He just told the Pharisees when they came, you hypocrites, you know, you vipers, you know, all kind of words like that, uncomplimentary statements that he made there. You know, who warned you to come and be baptized, you know, to escape the wrath of God that is coming? God is not interested in that, and that's in essence what he was telling them. Unless your heart is clean, it is of no value for you to come and be baptized. And how many people are baptized and they continue to walk in their old way? You see, just pretending, playing church, playing synagogue, playing mosque, whatever it may be. Whatever we do, we must be doing it from the heart in purity of spirit and truth, and obey the truth. And if you don't know it, gradually we're going to learn it, but at least show the way, the willingness that we are willing to walk in it. God does not demand that we know everything in the beginning, and he allows us. Not because it is permitted to walk in iniquity, but he allows us to continue, you see, in our way of life, since we have already made a confession of faith that we are willing to walk in that way, you know, way of life, and every day we're going to grow in grace and knowledge and understanding. You see, so he allows us to come in his presence and to have a relationship with him, and yet at the same time he demands growing grace, knowledge and understanding. Be perfect as I am perfect, you see. Now study my word every day so you would know what is filthy about you and get rid of it. God does not demand immediate perfection. That was the problem of the Pharisees when they saw people, all the nations, foreigners being grafted into the commonwealth of Israel. They demanded everything all at the same time. Unless, you know, they get circumcised and obey the whole law of Moses, they said, you know, they cannot be brethren. That's not what God wanted. He says, no, you come. Just like you Israelites, when you came, you were all filthy and polluted and defiled. And it took you a long time before you began to really obey me. So what do you demand from others? You know, that you could not demand from yourself. And that was hypocrisy there on their part, not understanding the process of conversion. Just like a child, you begin as a baby. Don't demand from a baby to be an adult. You see, and that's all it was there. But on the other hand, does not mean, well, just continue to walk in your own filthiness and remain there. You see, so you cannot go from one extreme to the other. That's what the pagan church of Rome has taught people. You can remain, you know, as filthy as you are. Just confess Christ, and that's all you have to do. Just believe in Christ. And Christ said, oh no, you cannot come before me full of spots and blemishes and be accepted. You see, you got to study my word and get cleansed and purged and purified. Then you will be accepted. You see, and if you don't know everything, it's okay. But you are willing to learn and grow and change. And submit your will and your thoughts and your emotions and your feelings and your culture and your attitude and everything that is about us to him. You see, on a daily basis. And then gradually we are being cleansed and purged and purified and washed by his word, which we are reading. That's how we get purged. We come to a point where we realize, hey, we haven't been doing that. We got it all wrong. We thought it's okay to eat, you know, lobsters and ham. God says, hey, you shouldn't eat it. And so we give it up. Get rid of it. Throw it from the fridge. Things like that. That's how God washes us, by his word. That's how Jesus Christ sanctifies us, by his word. That's what he meant when he prayed to the Father. Sanctify them by your word. You see? That's how we get sanctified. Then this is accepted before him. Now that's what he's teaching his people from the beginning. And so when we go to the law, we study all these things, which are not just physical, they're spiritual. Also, mainly they're spiritual. And they have a physical also aspect to it. And so, that's what God is saying here. Again, verse 24, that which has its stones bruised, or crushed, or torn, or cut, you shall not offer unto the Lord. That's physically or spiritually. Neither shall you do thus in your land. Neither from the hand of the foreigner shall you offer the bread of your God of any of these, because their corruption is in them. That's why. You see? There is a blemish in them. They're polluted, they're defiled. And any one of us who is in this category, if we're polluted and defiled, even with an evil thought, even with a grudge against a brother, Christ made it very plain. You see, when he talked about sacrifices, you know, if you offer a sacrifice to God, and you remember, oh, you've got something against your brother, and you've got a grudge and things like that, he said, leave the sacrifice there. Why? Because it's not going to be accepted as long as you are blemished. And you're blemished with hatred, or envy, or a grudge, or malice, or whatever it may be. He said, you go back there, you reconcile to your brother, and you come clean. You see? So it's not just even physical. It's mostly spiritual. And that's what he said. I don't want it from the foreigners. So he's not going to accept an uncircumcised person coming to the temple and bringing an offering. He's not going to accept the bread from a foreigner. He's not going to accept anything from those who do not abide by his Torah. At least they are walking in that direction. They may not be perfect and know it all. You see? And that's what God is saying here. And even as it is, when you come to the temple, you cannot bring pork just because you don't know it yet. You know, but you know about other things. There are certain things, there are certain basics that you cannot transgress, period. You see? And stuff you don't know, you ask. And then you enter. Then you will be accepted. Otherwise, with all due respect, God is going to say, this is sensual and filthy. I'm not, you know, don't present it before me. You see? And, you know, go somewhere else and learn something about it. You've got my word to learn that. Go to people who know it, learn, then come back and I'll accept you. Because God does not tolerate sin from anybody. And He's not a respecter of persons, regardless of how sincere we are. And so that's what He says. I don't want it from them because their corruption is in them. There is blemish in them. They shall not be accepted for you. Period. And the Eternal has spoken to Moses, saying, when a bullock or a sheep or a goat is brought forth, then it shall be 7 days under the dam. In other words, as the instruction was given before, do not see the kid in his mother's milk. In other words, give him a period of time. Give the mother a period of time. You see, and the robbers in their ignorance began to invent a doctrine. Mind you, it was not Moses. It was not the prophet. You see, it was 1,500 years down the road in the days of the rabbis, Second Temple era, where the rabbis became prominent and the Pharisees took over because, by default, you see, because of the priests were not doing their job properly, they began to Hellenize, you see, injected foreign concepts and elements into the worship of God. And there were sincere people, good people, and said, no way, we're going to worship God and no one else. And so they, by default, became the rulers, and Christ accepted that, and so He acknowledged that, and He said the Pharisees sit in the seat of Moses, in other words, no longer the Sadducees, who should have been there, being the priests, you see. And so the Pharisees took over, but the problem is, Pharisees, being human beings, like everybody else, they began to invent their own rules and do's and don'ts and regulations. And that's where the problem with the Pharisees. God appreciated the work of the Pharisees. He did not appreciate the additions that went out of Him. You see? Of taking out of the law or adding to the law. And in that they were transgressing the law and making it of none effect. You see? But otherwise, much of the things that they taught was from the law itself. That's why he said, the seed in the law of Moses, so whatever they tell you, that is, whatever they tell you in accordance with the Torah, you better do it. Because it's not them, it's me speaking through Moses and not in person to you. That's what it was. And so the rabbi thought, well, what it means here, you cannot eat meat and milk, you know, diet, you know, the dairy products together. Well, that's not what God said. God just said, for 7 days, don't touch that kid. Leave it. That was a Gentile's custom, you know, when it was very tender and succulent and things like that. 1 day, 2 days, 3 days later, he just butchered it and ate it. It was the most delicious. And that's cruelty. Cruelty to the kid and cruelty to the mother. And, of course, those who are vegetarians, they say it's cruelty, period. But then, this is not of God. That's why Paul called them weak in the faith. Verse 27, he says just again. Verse 27. When a bullock or a sheep or a goat is brought forth, then it shall be 7 days. In other words, any of these animals, let them have their 7 days, you know, and with their own mother nursing. But from the eighth day, and thenceforth, that is, from that period of time, it may be accepted for an offering made by fire unto the Lord. So it's still young and tender and things like that, but give them 7 days to be together. And for the, you know, the process of milk, you know, that the animal produces to gradually dry out. That way, you see, you gradually wean them out. So God, you know, wanted them to remember, to continue to remember mercy. He's a God of mercy. So there is a strong teaching in Judaism that is called Tzar Ba'alei Chaim. In other words, have pity on animals. Be merciful to them. Don't do things that are cruel. You see, from God's point of view, not man's point of view. And this is a part of it. This is where they learn that from, which is good. And many of them do it to this very day, but some of them go to an extent, to the far extent, that was not intended by God. Well, they say, period, don't eat it. You see, don't eat animals at all. Eat vegetables. And verse 28, and whether it be cow or ewe, you shall not kill it and its young both in 1 day. That's again cruelty. You see, even that. So, you know, give them instructions to learn mercy. You see, to learn kindness, to learn compassion. That's a part of this law of Tzar Ba'alei Chaim. In other words, Tsar means sorrow. Bale chayim means animals. Sorrow of animals. In other words, have pity on animals. Mercy for animals. And so he says, don't do that either. Don't kill them both in one day. Even if it is 8 days already, still don't kill both of them. One at a time. You see? So he's teaching them mercy, kindness, compassion. That's part of his nature. You see? That's what the law of God is all about, the teachings of God, the Torah. That's the nature of God. That's how he feels about it. So he's teaching us not only the legal code, if some people think that it is just a legal code, but his feelings, his emotions, his tenderness, his kindness, his compassion. And so he wants to build in us that nature in us so we can extend it to everything else in life. You see? And that's what he's teaching them here. And from this principle, you can expand on it in so many other areas. Not to be evil to people. You know, there are some people that couldn't care less about their employees, and around the holiday season, they just lay them off. That's the worst time to lay them off, or, you know, right after they got married, they lay them off. You see, that's a cruel nature. Now, people don't think about it. God taught his people to be merciful like he is. Be you holy as I am. And compassion and mercy, that's a part of the holiness of God. Without that, God says, you're not going to see me. Verse 29, and when you sacrifice a sacrifice of thanksgiving unto the Lord, unto the Eternal, that is, you shall sacrifice it that you may be accepted. So do it with the right attitude, otherwise you would not be accepted. No ulterior motives there. On the same day it shall be eaten, you shall leave none of it until the morning. Why? Because I am the Lord. I said so. I am the Eternal. You obey my law. I've got all the reasons for it. I may not always tell you everything. You see? I don't want you to do it. And people will come up with all kinds of reasons. Well, maybe they didn't have refrigeration, and you know, God didn't want it to corrupt. Well, meat does not necessarily corrupt. You know, when you get to 7 o'clock in the morning, it can go for a few more hours. But that was the instruction that God gave them. You see? So there are many reasons like that, and we can study the law and come up with many more, and you know, if we're led and guided by the Spirit of God, not by our own understanding, not inventing our understanding. But in either case, that's how we begin. God says don't do it, we don't do it. Then later on we find out why. That's what David said. A good understanding have all they that do his commandments. You do them, you gradually begin to learn, understand more. Some people want to understand. I want to know it first. Why? Then I'll do it. That's a rebel. A lot of people are that way. Verse 32. And you shall keep my commandments and do them. I am the Eternal. You keep them and you do them. You don't keep your own commandments. You don't come up with your own interpretations of the law, as the Pharisees had done, as the clergy of Christianity had done, as Muhammad had done, as many others, and they all claim it comes, you know, directly from God, and to present God as a God of confusion, absent-minded, lost his marbles, he doesn't know what he's doing, he gives everybody different instructions, and he's all confused, and they all come to him, each in their own way, with their own doctrines, all in confusion, Babylon, and the things that they can worship him that way. You see? God made it very plain. I give you the command, I spell it with my lips, just follow it. And do it, and all is well. And then gradually you understand more, and God wants us to understand more. That's what he tells us. He commands us, grow in grace and knowledge and understanding. You see, of God, of the Lord Jesus, of his word, of his truth, that's his nature and character. He doesn't want us to remain blind and have blind obedience. And so he said, you shall keep my commandments and do them. That's mitzvot for commandments. You see, the ten were not called mitzvot, the ten were called dibrot, oracles, utterances. And that is made very plain. And so he said, you shall keep my commandments and do them. I am the Eternal. That is all of you, the priest, Israel, the strangers, anybody who comes in contact with me. This is what you do. You don't have confusion there about what you want to do and think that you can all worship me. Each one does his own thing. Verse 32, and you shall not profane my holy name, because if you do not keep my commandments and you do your own thing, you see, and you follow your own ways and you have your own different denominations and sects and doctrines and churches and things, this and that and the other thing, you are going to profane my holy name. You see, you're going to present me as a God of confusion, doesn't know what he's doing. You know, the one community, as Muhammad says, that's the way it goes. To one community he gives Friday, to one community he gives the Sabbath, to another community he gives Sunday, and everybody does his own thing, and they all have their own religion. And at the end time, the day of the resurrection, God is going to sort out all the differences. Well, that's foolishness. You see, that's a man that knows nothing about God. And that's how he presented God to his own people. And so they believe it to this very day. You know, everybody has his own religion, and there are a lot of people that believe that. Well, there are many ways to worship God, and each one does it in his own way. God says, I don't want it that way. If you do, you're going to profane my holy name. But I will be hallowed or sanctified among the children of Israel. How? By the mere fact that all of them are obeying my Torah and not their own. Exactly as I told them. And so he said, I will be sanctified or hallowed among the children of Israel, for that matter, all mankind who want to walk in the same path. I am the Eternal who sanctifies you, and I sanctify you by my commandments. You see, God is sanctifying us by his truth. And that's what he says. I am the truth. I am the light. I am the way. I am not different ways. I am the way. One way. Narrow is the road. Yeah, the majority want to walk in broad ways. And so we continue in verse 33. Actually, it's a continuation of the thought where God says, I'm the Eternal that hallow you, that brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your Elohim. You see, he had so many Elohim over there, and he looked to them for protection, for safety, for healing, for childbirth, for this and that and the other thing. And none of them is really Elohim, but I'm the only one who is the true Elohim, and I proved it by all the things that I've done. They cannot prove any of those things. They haven't done anything for you. So he told them, I am the one that brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your Elohim. I am the Eternal. They are not eternal. You can break them, destroy them. And they are not eternal. And so he's making a difference between himself and them. And unfortunately, to this very day, people haven't learned this lesson of idolatry. They still look to physical things, to programs, to people. As David says, do not put your trust in man, or in the son of man, or in princes, in whom there is no help. You know, they die at that moment. That's it. That's the end of them. What can they do for you? People put their trust in the stock market. That's their God. When you see the session in the stock market in Wall Street, you realize that those are all idol worshippers. They're totally given to it, to that idol worship. And it goes up and it goes down, and people lose money and people make money. You see? With God, it doesn't work like that. That's not a true God. And so now and then, God has to teach them a lesson. That's what happened in 29, you know, the stock crash. And it happens all the time. So people can learn, even though God is not dealing with them personally, still he's the God of the whole earth. He teaches people lessons here and there, so people would learn not to put their trust in their idols. But they still do. They are not learning it. Until the time when he will come again to this earth and totally obliterate from under heaven the whole system of idolatry and prove to all mankind that he and he only is the only genuine God, Elohim, eternal, deliverer, giver of all things. Until this point, unfortunately, the children of Israel haven't learned that. And now we go to chapter 23. It's a very momentous chapter. And much information that basically embraces the entirety of the plan of God from the beginning until the end. Most people don't realize that. And certainly, the overwhelming majority of Jews do not understand that either. They just know they have these holidays here. They're written in the book of Leviticus. They keep them. They don't know why in some cases. And in some of them, like Passover, they know why from a certain point of view, because God delivered them out of Egypt. And others, he told them certain things, and then certain holidays they don't understand, like the Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year, or the Feast of Trumpets, as it is called, or the Day of Atonement. They don't really know exactly why those things are there, because God does not even give them an explanation. And so here we are entering, in essence, sort of a coded message, that if you do not know the context, the background, you really would not comprehend it properly. And the majority do not, unfortunately. And yet, thankfully, by the grace of God, there are always those in the past many generations and in this generation that do understand, at least a good measure of understanding. It's not a perfect one. We still have divisions among ourselves as to the meaning of this and that and the other thing. But there is a general comprehension and understanding there and its link to the entirety of the plan of God. And so we're going to go through that. We're not necessarily going to uncover every detail concerning it, because we are having, even though we're going through the scriptures word for word, we're not having, you know, an extremely exhaustive study either. That's something that is done on a daily basis by all those who are studying the Bible day and night, and discussing it, debating it, and talking about it, and sharpening one another, and so forth, and letting above all the Holy Spirit lead them into the exact truth, and not leaning to our own understanding or our own intelligence. And so we read in chapter 23 here of Leviticus, "And the Eternal spoke unto Moses," and notice the wording, "saying, speak unto the children of Israel," and for that, for that matter, you might say, all mankind, all those who want to come to the God of Israel and have a relationship with Him, all those who are going to be grafted into the commonwealth of Israel and have a relationship with Him, you see? So, you might say in modern language, in terms of what happened 2,000 years ago, speak unto the church. Anybody who thinks that he is in the church, you see? And here it is, only the children of Israel, that was the church in the wilderness. But that speaks about everyone who is going to worship God, regardless of where he is and what religion he is. If he wants to worship the God of Israel, this is what he has to do and to understand. And so God, he says here to Moses, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, the appointed seasons of the Lord. In other words, these are the appointed seasons of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. So first God is saying, these are the appointed seasons of the Lord, of the Eternal, of Jehovah. He didn't say these are the appointed seasons of Judah, of the Jews, or of Israel, or of Moses, or of Abraham. You see? Now he said, these are my appointed seasons. As we read in Genesis chapter 1, in the placement of all the stars, and the moon, and the sun, and the positions, we read there that God placed them for times and seasons and years and moon and months, that is, moons and months, that's the same. You see? So this is what he was talking about. The calendar of his holy days that he was going to bring later on to his own people, to, you know, in other words, the knowledge of it. Actually, the knowledge of it was from the Garden of Eden, because the plan of God began from the beginning. And the sacrifice of Jesus Christ was determined to be from the foundation of the earth. That's why it said in Revelation about Him, the Lamb of God was slain from the foundation of the earth, from the beginning of the planet earth, and its purpose, and the creation of man in it, that knowledge was there. So the holy days, though they are given now to Israel, you see, they have been there all along from the Garden of Eden. A lot of people don't realize that because they are not written in specific before there. But when you understand the plan of God, the law of God, the teachings of God, you see, especially when the Sabbath is mentioned there plainly in chapter 2, you realize that this kind of things are not just invented somewhere down the road. A lot of people think that a lot of the teachings that Christ brought were invented 2,000 years ago, and they think, well, that's a new religion, that's our religion, that's called Christianity. And that's total nonsense, because those people are totally ignorant of the Word of God, of the law of God, of the Torah of God. Otherwise, we would have known. Those things have been there for you from the beginning. And so Sinai was not the beginning of this information or knowledge, you see, because all the laws of God that God is now giving to His own people have been there from the beginning. Abraham kept them, as we read it, and you can read it again in Genesis 26? Somewhere there, Genesis 26, verse 5, something like that, where he talks to Isaac, and he says to him that I will do all these things for you because Abraham kept my law, my charge, my commandments, my precepts. In other words, he kept the entirety of the law that I gave him. It's not something that just was introduced in Sinai for the first time. That it was given to them in a codified form all at one time, you see, but has been there before. That's why when people study the code of Hammurabi that lived, in the days of Abraham, they realized that there are so many laws there that are the same as the laws of Moses, and they thought that Moses copied it from them instead of realizing that Hammurabi knew those laws because Shem, the son of Noah, was still around. and the knowledge of God was still around. A lot of people still were keeping the law of God. You see? Even in Babylon. And they had a lot of the knowledge of God. And of course, unfortunately, also idolatry along the way. And you find some other people like Balaam, that we'll read about later on, a prophet that knew God and knew an awful lot of the knowledge of God, but only had a major problem, unfortunately, with covetousness. Anyway, God at this point is introducing his wife to himself. You know, he's creating a nation, is giving them the law in a package deal, but it's not a law that wasn't there before. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point. Continue next time. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.